Welcome to the Floor Academy Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Hedin, owner, technically owner of Illustrious Hardwoods. I'm going into the old intro. That doesn't work anymore. I am a former contractor, still licensed in the state of Arizona, now podcast host, speaker, business consultant, and, I'm just helping come up with crazy ideas for you to better run a business. This week, we have Tom Cockerill of Cockerill and Company. He and his wife, Sarah, have started the UK Flooring Podcast, and they also own a hardwood sand and finish company that they grew from their dining room table into an absolute juggernaut, doing close to $1 million a year in revenue. Promptly made a couple of bad business decisions and lost it all, the fancy cars and fun toys and the company and essentially everything. Said, that's not acceptable. We're going to learn how to do this, and built it all back up. And now they're taking their lessons learned and putting them out into the world through their UK Flooring Podcast and Cockerill and Company. And really what I learned when I met them at Surfaces this year was that we've built the same company and we'd never talked, we'd never chatted, we didn't know each other, but we both came up with the same idea around damn near the same time and said, there's not a solution and there needs to be one. I guess I'm just going to be the person to put it into place because no one else is doing it. And I found that absolutely fascinating. So that translates into the bigger topic here of we're not so different after all. It doesn't matter, right? Look, plumber, framer, electrician, HVAC guy, for the UK folks, if you're a Sparky, whatever you want to be. You think that as a flooring person, tile setter, whatever, like, oh, they're not like me. They're different. They do their own thing. Guess what? We all have the same problems. We all have hacks in our industry. We all have people that don't understand how to run a business and are just winging it, flying by the seat of their pants. We all have a lack of education, more than likely. We all have the people that say that doesn't work in my area. And, so all of a sudden, We're not so different than the tradesman next to us. All right. Well, it's an American problem. No, it's not. Because clearly in the UK, it's a problem. If you go way, way back and you check out my episode, Flooring Africa with Barry Dovston, he's running a nonprofit to educate people in South Africa on better install techniques, but they got the same business problems over there as well. It doesn't matter where we're at in the world. Like, it's not a contractor problem. It's not a flooring guy problem. It's not a business owner problem. This is just a problem throughout time with people. And so we're going to sit here. We're going to talk about where we need to step up, what needs to change, how we can help others do better and hopefully lift everyone up, because a rising tide lifts all boats. And that's what we need to do, is we need to lift all boats, not just worry about ourselves. And I'd rather put it out there and let people choose to hop on board or not. And I'm sure Tom would agree, is I'm going to put it out there. Whoever chooses to hop on board can hop on board. If you don't, it's right there. You can get on at any time, but I'm not going to worry about you when you're drowning, because the opportunity is there. You just have to take it. I threw out the life preserver. You can grab it or not. That's your choice. So why are we here? Floor Academy is here every week to give you the business education you need to move your business forward, to be more profitable, free up that time so that you can actually have it with your family, friends, take vacations, get away from your business, enjoy yourself. I want you to, be able to pass that fishing test, as we like to say. Can you go fishing for a weekend, a week, and the whole thing doesn't fall apart and you're not getting blown up while you're out in the wilderness with your satellite phone that you have to have so you can keep everything going? Unacceptable. So we're going over all of that. Go check out flooracademypod.com. We got the shop over there. You can pick up some swag. You can learn more about our mastermind groups so that you can really take your business to the next level with accountability, active goal setting, and being able to talk it over with vetted peers that want to compete at a top level within this industry. And if you want to help support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/Floor Academy. We will have Tom introduce himself in just 1 minute. We got to get a quick word in from Kronos Software, one of our fabulous sponsors. So, if your flooring business is giving you headaches, Kronos is the remedy you need. Kronos Flooring Business Manager is an easy-to-use and affordable solution that simplifies and streamlines your business operations, managing everything from leads and inventory to scheduling installations all in one user-friendly platform. What sets Kronos apart is its comprehensive suite of features, ease of navigation, and full integration with QuickBooks. Don't let your business be a headache. Choose Kronos for a smoother, headache-free business management experience. Visit kronossoft.com/academy today to schedule a demo. Kronos, fast relief for your flooring business headaches. The link is in the show notes, folks. You can find it there. Click on it. Victor and Chesney will take great care of you. And if you're listening to this live, we are doing a demo Wednesday evening, and you can come check that out. There's a link in the Facebook group. If you miss this episode and you hear it when it comes out proper on the podcast and you want a demo, use the link or hit me up in the group, and we can always schedule another big event in the group and get lots of people in there so that they are not doing individual things. And they're happy to work with you. They will look at your business and help you try and customize this platform, the CRM, to your business, and they want to help you actually grow because it was built by a retailer for retailers in the business because there was not a great solution. That's enough out of me. I promise we will let Tom introduce himself. Welcome to the show, Tom. And who are you? What do you do? And why do you do it?
Kyle, thank you so much for having me. Tom Cockrell, co-founder of Cockrell & Fort Co. See, the other owner is Sarah, my wife. We are business consultants, mentors. Sarah's a qualified transformational coach as well. And we work with flooring contractors from 100K to 4 million. And then we also work with some of the leading manufacturers to deliver their plans as well. We also own a micro flooring business still there lurking in the wings, so we still have our toe in the water. It's substantially smaller with two installers rather than the 22 that we used to have. Cool. And just to put the icing on the cake, we also own a digital marketing agency. Different directors, but I have a business partner in that business. So that's me in about three short sentences.
Again, so many similarities. I didn't get to the scale you got to. I made some decisions that stopped me a little bit prematurely of that, and I found different directions to go. But the media company is right up my alley. The advertising, it's something that I would like to incorporate into Floor Academy as it continues to grow. I think they naturally go hand in hand. If you're going to help people grow their business, then why not have a one-stop shop solution to be able to do that, from here's the business education to here's the actual solutions you need. We'll work with you because we know your company intimately. When you're actually getting deep with the clients and you're mentoring them and you're giving them the products to say this is where you take things, it's amazing how much better you can help them on the back end when you have clear communication with your teams to get them to the next level a lot faster, because you know what they're going to fight, you know what they're not going to fight, you know how to handle them and really get them to say, all right, look, yeah, I know I need it, I'm going to just take the dive and do it.
I think that's where the digital marketing came from. Was we called it Truth Digital because we were sick of agencies not telling the truth. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. Again, the only way we've been able to scale so quick is with other people. So I've got a long-suffering business partner who's done 20 years with Google and things like that, and that was the only way we could do it. But we had a problem where we needed to help people scale, but we needed to have someone with complete integrity, so i.e. mm-hmm. let's do it ourselves. So that's where it's And the same with the micro contractor. One of our installers has been with us 20 years. So he's took the reins and he runs that side of the business. So again, it's having the right people rather than mm-hmm. trying to do it ourselves as well, I think is the only way we've been able to do that.
You can only get so big by yourself. And I mean, that's, we're not so different. And I think that's what we want to talk about here. And so I think we want to believe that we only have these problems in America, or they only exist in England, or as I mentioned in the intro, in South Africa, or pick wherever you're at. I know I have people in Australia and New Zealand that listen. There's been listens from places in South America. It's been listened to all over the world. And I think that's because everyone needs the solutions that are being offered. And one of the things that I know you started the podcast for, Flooring UK Podcast, is that business knowledge wasn't getting passed around within the trades, especially in flooring. And that's where I came from. So what was it that led you to say, this has to exist? Like, what was it that brought you to the realization to even start the podcast?
I think the thing for me was, we scaled the business for 15 years. I think we got to circa 1.6 and a half million. And we literally did it by making it up, is the only thing that I can say. And yes, we did things really well and some things really wrong. But I was searching for years and years and years. You know, even back in the day, I used to go to the bank manager. I would go to different people to get help, but I could never find the help. And that was someone that didn't want to receive help. You know, I wasn't extroverted, sort of always looking, but I did look at times. And I thought, the industry's so far in the dark ages, I'm just going to get my message out there and say, you know, some people are going to hate it, some people are going to love it, but if I just do what I do and it makes one person's life different, that would be worth it. And then, you know, we're nearly on 100 episodes later where it's like, it's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. It was just, and I think, well, that's what me and Sarah said was when we started the podcast and Cockrell & Co. was, if we can make sure a few, or, you know, even one families didn't have to go through what we went through, we would have done a good job. And now we've got the privilege to do that with hundreds of people, which is just nuts, absolutely bananas. But that was it. It was just an idea. If we can make an impact, it's just a different feeling. You know, and I think at one point we fell out of love with flooring. And I kind of went on a little bit of a mission for maybe 6 months trying to help other businesses in different industries. And we were successful at that. And it all came back down to, actually, let's just make a difference to the flooring industry, because there's just no one. Yes, you can go and learn how to install carpet or LVT or screeding or whatever, but who else can sort of get you from A to B without going through the pains of what you needed to if you do the work? And that was it. So then that just lit a fire. And then and I think, in honesty, it was just, you know, like an idea on the back of a piece of paper, and it's like, let's just roll with it. If we're, you know, I'm a huge advocate, if you say you're going to do something, just do it. If not, just don't do it. But it don't sit on the fence. And when, you know, I was having performance coaching at the time, and my coach was just like, look, you're big and old enough to know that you either just do it or just stop fucking about, type of thing. And it was just like, and we just fired into it. That was it. Just, you know, as I said, I think it was just taking that leap. And it's, the more we've done personal development and work with other specialists, the more we can give to other people. And then when you can sit back and see these results, that's where the game changes. That just gives much more, for me, a new level of satisfaction to when you hand over a lovely floor to your client and they love it. To me, that got boring. You know, we did that thousands of times, and we, you know, fantastic reputation. But that lift of, you know, happiness, let's say, was a little bit boring. I said, we've got to do this with businesses and make a difference in a different way. And that's why we do it. If that wasn't too airy-fairy for you.
No. Look, I love it. So I went looking for it, right? And so I was listening to other podcasts because I was like, well, I need to be a better leader. I need to know how to learn how to market and advertise and strategize. And I want to... So I was listening to all these different business podcasts. And so one day I typed flooring into the search bar. Nothing came up. And I said, what the hell? Okay, well, you used to work in reality television, Kyle. You know how audio equipment works. Why don't you go be that guy? So, I mean, I needed the advice anyway. So if I'm going to sit there and start interviewing other contractors and having discussions with them, I was like, well, I might as well record it and put it out there. That's not that hard to do. So I figured out how to do all of that, started doing it. And it's funny, you talk about not sitting on the fence with an idea. I recorded the first episode in March of 2019. In fact, I recorded the first two episodes. We did them back to back, and it was just really, really long. In March of 2019. If you go and look when the first one was published, September of 2019, I sat on it for 6 months and didn't do anything with it. And one of the guys, Ken Ballen, who I interviewed in that episode, was like, what are you doing, man? Like, are you going to release this thing? Are you going to do anything with it? And I was just like, I'm so busy. Like, I'm trying to run this company and install floors and do all this stuff. And I was like, I don't have time. And he was like, look, either release it or don't. Like, get rid of it if you're not going to do anything with it. So I released it, and it's been every Wednesday since then. There's 240 of them, and it's a juggernaut now. But that also led to the issue of, everything I was learning. I didn't put everything into running my business, but I was putting enough in that I was doing well as an owner operator, or having, you know, an employee here and there when I would scrounge one up and trying to make that work. And it became a distraction to that business. But then the more I kept doing the podcast, the more I fell in love with interviewing people and applying some of my old, like, reality television stuff. And it just kept becoming more and more interesting to me there. And I was losing passion for the flooring. And recently, it was a little over a month ago now. Well, month ago in real time, when did I shut it down? I shut it down at like the beginning of February, end of January, something like that. Right before services. So this is coming out in April. So a couple months, but I finally was like, I have to shut the flooring company down because I can't accomplish anything. Both companies became such a distraction to each other. And I knew which direction I wanted to go, but there just wasn't enough funds. And so it was like, all right, I'm just going to go out on a limb here. I think there's enough funds from Floor Academy at this point that I can do this. And I had to shut down the flooring business because it had become the distraction to Floor Academy, whereas it started the other way around. And I think it's that learning curve. It's having to go out on a ledge and say, all right, I'm willing to take this chance, which, I mean, you did. You guys lost everything. You didn't have to put everything back on the line and try and build another business and, you know, create what you've now created. You could have said, ah, man, that was tough. That was hard. I'm just going to go pick up a job and be an employee somewhere, and we'll just do the best we can. But that wasn't good enough. You had to have more. So it's interesting that, you know, it, kind of the same circumstances, a little bit of different play out, but as we each got super stressed out in different ways and then said, there's got to be a better way. And it led to creating a thing to give it to other people. And I think a lot of people look at podcasts, they get into them, they want to start them, and they're like, oh, I'm going to be like Joe Rogan. And they get mad if they're not doing millions of listens a month. Man, if you get 10 listens a month, you're killing it, man. That's 10 people that are sitting in front of you on, like, you're on a stage, and that's 10 people every month that you get to speak to. And I know that your numbers are higher, and, you know, I'm doing a couple hundred listens every 7 days on a new episode. So, like, I fill a small auditorium. It's absolutely amazing. Like, I'm super privileged, and thank you, everyone listening, because it's amazing what the platform has become. So what is that kind of done for you, you know, to be able to know that the message is getting out there more than what you thought it would?
I think that I enjoy is now we did it to get our message across and to speak to other people about theirs. But I love speaking to new people who I've never spoken to before and then getting their insights. So I've gone from, I remember, like, when you did your episode, we did our episode one, and we committed financially, equipment and everything. So we're going to drop on the 1st of January. So we then got the, like, our first episode over to the podcast producer, like, 9 p.m. the day before the New Year's Eve or New Year's Day or something like that. I can't remember what it was, but it was like, we tried to record it about probably 10 times, and it was panic stations. It was, does it sound right? Are we going to have to re-record it? And like now, I get a new guest on, and I just look forward to speaking to people that have been on a different path. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I get most from it. And it seems a little bit surreal that people come to the training center or we go to the exhibitions or something, and someone will come over and go, hey, I've been listening to the podcast for 6 months. And I'm like, I'm like, well, I don't know who you are, but you're talking to me like you know who I am.
It's the weirdest thing. It's so weird.
It's just so weird. Yeah. And it's,
they're like your best friend. And you're like, well, you know everything about me, but I have not learned anything about you.
Yeah. And that feels weird to me. That just feels abnormal, and super privileged that people take the time to listen into it. And I think what I enjoy more is people get different things. I'll get one thing, and then someone else listening in another part of England or whatever, or even across the world, I'll get something completely different. And then they'll message the show or say, oh, I really found that bit valuable. I'm like, all right, I didn't find that valuable, but I found this bit valuable. You know, and it's, I think it's just that. And now it's, I think, yeah, people starting a podcast think it's easy. And doing it every single week and trying to, you know, make sure it's either interesting or engaging, and being able to just, I don't know, deliver. It's hard work, but very rewarding. I just, now I enjoy it. But I think probably for the first 25 episodes, I wouldn't say I didn't enjoy it, but I certainly didn't look forward to it.
So, it's tough to get going. I think it's tougher now because there's, you know, it started off as there was no commitment in it. And now I have commitments because there's sponsors, there's agreements in place. Like, I have to deliver every Wednesday. And so it's become a job at this point. And I'm like, oh man, what am I going to do? Like, I'm running low on episodes. I got to come up with some ideas. I got to find some people. And like, it can get a little stressful. Whereas before, like, I never missed, but if I would have, it wouldn't have been the end of the world. It was just a personal commitment that I made. But now there's like, there's real stakes involved. And so it's a little bit different. What about just in general, right? Like, even in the intro, we kind of, I mentioned about, or maybe it was our pre-conversation, but again, we're not that different. So in England, are there a bunch of people that say that doesn't work in my area when you start talking about pricing strategies, or if you, you know, there's people that don't think you can charge that much as you do if you're like a higher end contractor because nobody in their area will pay it? Like, do you get the same objections that we constantly see here? I got to assume so.
Daily. I think when we start our courses here, there's two things. One, getting your numbers correct and where you got the numbers from, which I'll come back to. Mm-hmm. And then two, being in the right mental and emotional state. The rest kind of looks after itself. You know, everyone can get someone to do Google. Everyone can possibly recruit someone if they needed to. But mental and emotional state and getting your numbers, I see every single day, and now I'm even getting tagged regularly on Facebook when someone asks a question, what should I be charged in on this day? And it's like going shopping for a car and saying, I just want a car. Well, how much do you want to spend? It's like, and I get why they're asking it. I know I'm not that stupid to understand, but I know they want help and guidance. But in answer to your question, yes, people are asking for help and making assumptions on what other people are doing. And probably because there's nowhere else to look. There isn't a textbook. There's not a how much should I charge book that you can get from the library. And I couldn't believe where me and you were sat at services, and it was like, I can't remember how we were going into the conversation, but both me and, well, you and Sarah, because I won't take the credit for it, have created a framework to price a job so you are profitable. We haven't gone on Facebook and sort of asked 30 installers across the country. We've just got a framework on Excel that makes us profitable as if by magic. And like when you show people this, like, and they understand it, they're like, I've been doing this 15 years and I've just sort of made it up. And I'm like, I just don't understand why you would. I do understand why you do that, because again, you don't learn these things. But if something's not working, why keep doing it?
Because you don't know it's not working. I think that's the problem, right? If this guy says online that he's charging $2 a yard, $2 a foot, $2 a, you know, a meter, whatever it is, it comes down to, well, he's doing it, and there's five other guys saying they're doing it. It must be working. But nobody qualified if that was subcontracted to them, if it was residential retail and they sold it themselves, if it was commercial, how big their company is. Are you actually saving money, and do you, you know, have any debt, or are you living paycheck to paycheck? Like, none of the answers are qualified. They're just numbers on a screen. And to me, they mean absolutely nothing. And then everyone's like, oh, I can't charge that in my area. Oh, you're full of shit. You're not getting that. I know someone in Iowa charging $18 a yard to put down regular ass carpet. Nothing fancy, just your standard nylon carpet. And he gets it all day, every day. And there's guys local, the same town, and they're like half the price. And there's guys doing commercial work, and it's like $350 a yard. It's all over the place. But if you know your numbers and you understand, if you actually look at what it costs you to run, how much money you want to make, and then you go and you assess your cost of living and you figure out how much production you can do, then you'll get real numbers that actually mean something. And, you know, that's what my spreadsheet does. I'm sure that's what Sarah's does, is you got to evaluate it from a perspective of, I'd like this standard of living, and it's going to take X, Y, and Z to get it. And you can't argue that.
Yeah. An extreme example of that is no different to the food industry. And I've never owned a restaurant. And I probably never planned to. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we were both in Vegas. Me and Sarah went out for a two-course meal with Diet Pepsi. And it was $290 for a steak and whatever. Service was brilliant. Food was fantastic. It was at the top of the strat. So, you know, the ambience, you know, the location was unbelievable. But it was, you know, just short of $300. In the UK, I mean, again, this is an extreme example. You can go down to a local public house, maybe get a steak on a Tuesday for maybe £12, you know? And it's like night and day. It is the same cow that has been chopped up.
Yes.
But you are bringing more value to the table. So if you are fitting carpet, or you're fitting hardwoods or LVT or whatever, if you are doing it to a better standard, if you are showing up and giving an exceptional service, you know, and you're doing things right, I always say you can charge what you want, and people take that the wrong way. It's not like make a number up and we're all driving Lamborghinis, because it's not that. But it's, you can, as long as the value outweighs the the value you bring into the table outvalues the price, it's a no-brainer. But people just genuinely think that is not possible. And I just can't, I just keep feeling like I bang on about it, is put your client experience first, put your price second. Do not put your price first, please. You know, it's, look at how you are dealing with inquiry from the minute your phone rings to the minute you're handing over that property, and miraculously the price just comes, and then it becomes a non-negotiable. Your standards are raised, and I think that's where you raise your standards, like the steak or the
definitely.
And I'm not saying everyone is going to be buying a $300 steak, but you know, we'd probably be happy spending 70 or 80 if it's a good steak. You know, Las Vegas is a bit of a thing to its own. But flooring is the same. If you know, if you're a man that's fitting at a certain level, if it's exceptional, he's not expensive if the job is exceptional. You know, if it's a poor job and it's expensive, that's a different thing. But if you can look at that client experience, for me, that's everything.
That's, I mean, I talk about solve the problem And so what does Mrs. Jones actually want in her house? You know, she wants a solution to having a shitty floor or a leaking shower or whatever it's going to be. And she wants it to look nice. But then she's worried because she knows it's a construction project and, oh, it's going to be dirty and you're going to ruin everything and you're going to constantly show up late and have delays. And because contractors have a horrible reputation. So if you can go and you start solving all those problems and show her that you can do all of these things, when you present something that's more than other people, you've built in all of this value that says I can, you know, oh, well, I'm willing to pay that because I'm going to get a better experience. The other part of it is one of the best ways I ever had it explained to me was everyone can get $100, right? For the most part. And if you think $100 is still a lot of money, I'm cool with that. It's a decent amount, but I'm not going to let it go for anything that I deem worth less than $100. And so if somebody offered me a stick of gum, that better be like a gold stick of gum for me to say, sure, I'll part with it for $100. But if I'm looking at something that I want, whether it's a video game, computer part, camera accessory, you know, a stereo, if I put the value of that item at more than $100, like it doesn't matter what the price tag says, because I can go look at a Lamborghini and say, I don't care that it's a $2 million car. I don't value it at $2 million. If I had the $2 million, I would not buy that car because to me, it's not worth it. I'd rather do something else with that money. And so if I can go find a stereo or something and I, you know, it's listed at $99.99 and I have $100 and I really want to listen to my music very loudly, then I might be willing to make that decision to make the exchange. And now it's worth it. And so you're exactly right. What is that client experience worth? Because it's not the service being offered. It's not an exchange of money for carpet or for the hardwood. It's an exchange for how you get to the finished product. And I think that's where a lot of people are missing the mark, is they're constantly caught up on selling by price instead of, like you said, the experience.
Do you find over in the US people will charge a different rate for the same time? So what I mean is they would get, that's something else we've come across quite actively. Oh, I only get, let's go on to meter squared price, £5 a square meter for this, but I get 15 for that.
Right? Yes.
Is it not the same human in the same van? You know, I know different, you can lay things faster and things like, I know all that, but it's like if it was done on a time basis, they both take the same amount of time. And that blows me away. It's like, why are you charging less for the same time on your watch? And they're like, oh, I don't know. That's just the going rate for that.
Yes.
Who's made this going up? Who's the going up, the going rate man? I've never heard of him.
It's Facebook. So it's, you didn't know? It's the Facebook groups. Hey, what's the going rate for this? They tell you. I'll take it back to carpet. It's constantly one of the biggest complaints with subcontractors here is that the retailers are complaining they can't find anyone to install carpet, but they're paying $6.50 a yard to install carpet, maybe $9 if you're lucky, right? $1 a square foot, basically. And you can go out and lay vinyl plank for $2 a square foot for a retailer. Well, I got to put in 900 square feet one way or the other, and the vinyl plank might take me a little bit longer, but I think carpet takes more skill personally than doing, you know, the prep work in LVP it takes more skill, but putting carpet, seaming it properly, all this stuff, being able to actually power stretch it in, seam sealing, you know, all that. Like, there's more skill, I think, in actually laying carpet. So why isn't it paying the same? Like, why am I having to go out and kill myself to do something to make the same amount of money? But no one's willing to go and demand more. And it seems the retailers aren't willing to go and try and increase what they charge in their market because they're like, no one will pay that. They're going to pay whatever you tell them to pay. Right? Yeah. Can they go shop it? Sure. But why not just, like you said, create an experience, solve the problem in a way that makes it worth them to do it. I think it's pretty standard here. People expect carpet to become wrinkled. And if it was properly installed, it should never wrinkle unless you have it in like the carpet cleaning companies you have out clean it wrong. So why not offer a, you know, lifetime warranty on free free restretches? You're never going to, how many are you going to have to go back on? One in 100? Yeah. One in 500? If the guys and gals actually do it right in the field, just put something crazy out there that says, I'm going to stand behind this forever. And then, you're more expensive, but look at all this extra value over here. You're never going to have to worry about this problem. Well, they never should have had to have worried in the first place, but we've done it improperly for so long. We've created a bigger problem in the market that now persists. And I think that's where a lot of this education and stuff needs to come from, is that we have to learn how to run the business, because it's been done so poorly for so long that we've created more issues in the marketplace than previously existed. We've trained clients to expect the worst, and that's not a good thing.
No.
I need to interrupt. I'm sorry. I got to interrupt this real quick. Otherwise I'm going to be going a little bit too long. let me get the sponsor ad read in, and then I will come back and I want to hear what you have to say, Tom.
No problem.
We got a quick word from Johns Manville. Compatible with all GoBoard products is the new GoBoard membrane. If you're asking why a membrane when GoBoard itself is waterproof through and through, the answer is simple. A membrane extends your GoBoard installation for mud pans, steam rooms, and shared walls requiring a fire-rated board under the waterproofing. Now, who's going to be the most badass GoBoard installer out there? You are. Visit www.jm.com/GoBoard for all the product details. Don't forget to check out all of their other options, from wedges and pans and drains, their sealant, their generous warranty of using other sealants. They got options for you. Check it out, jm.com/GoBoard. All right, I cut you off, Tom. I'm sorry. Please, feel free.
No, it's no problem. I think one of my favorite things that when clients come here to the training center, we go over the prices and we do a quick sort of, sort of scenario check-in. We don't go completely into depth, but in deep enough. And there was someone that was on one of our last courses that we realized they needed to be charged another 15%. And he was like, no, it's not going to work in my area. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. And I'm like, you know, I've been doing this, da-da-da. And I'm like, look, okay, 15 is not going to work, but that's where I think you should be. For the next 5 quotations, just do it 10. Go uncomfortable and do it 10% more. And then if they, hold with me, I think you need to be at 15 from what you've told me. And the biggest sort of buzz that I get is like, I put 5 quotes in, all 5 are accepted. And it's like, well, why didn't you just put 15 in? Like, because that's the number it needed to be. I honestly didn't think I would get it. And it's not like, it's like as if it's witchcraft. It's like, no, you are already doing an awesome job. You are already doing it. And that, I think that's one thing that I just love what we do. And I don't even like the numbers side of it. I just follow the structure and just say, look, this is the standard we are holding ourselves to. You can't vary. And, you know, if you want good weeks and bad weeks, just sometimes use it. Sometimes don't, just make it up. But if you just use it, that will hold you to a standard. And then that will... So it could even get you more work and more of the right work. So yeah, I think I just love it when people actually implement something and do it. Yes. And that standard raises. And then they're the ones that probably aren't then commenting on Facebook. They're like, oh, I've sussed this now. This is cool. So
no, I totally agree. I think for me, I am the number. I like the numbers. I like playing with them. I like seeing what you can do with them and pushing the extremes. And, well, let me try and raise it another 5% and see if anybody, like, where's the resistance point? Like, how valuable can I make this without pushing everyone away? I like playing with that. But for me, once I figured out what the numbers actually were, it gave me more confidence, because then I knew that previously when I first started, right, people would be like, oh, can I get a discount? Okay. Yeah, here, I'll give you 5% off, right? Just to get it. They were just asking to ask. I do that all the time. Like, you don't get what you don't ask for. And so they can sense that you're not great at what you do, and they're going to take advantage of that, and they're going to get more out of it to make it even more valuable to them. Because at one point I asked a client, they were like, can we get a discount? And I agreed. And when I went and picked up the check, I said, you know what? Can I ask you guys a personal question? They were like, yeah. It's like, if I would have said no, would you still have gone with me? And they were like, yep. It's like, damn it. All right. Thank you. And that was like really a big turning point for me. I was like, all right, I'm not giving discounts anymore. Obviously, like I could have kept my 5% and done it. And essentially, I think what it ended up being was I lost the profit on the material. And now that I'm more experienced, I understand that I transported the material, I installed it, I warranty it. I had a lot of liability in it. So like I can't afford to lose the profit from selling the material because I took risk in providing it. But as before, I was like, oh, it's bonus money. Like I'm just moving material. It doesn't matter. It's all extra. So if I didn't sell the material, I'm making the same amount as I would have before. That's not how it all works. It's you got to look at the bigger picture, and now I have a better understanding of it. I think that's the fun part, is you start getting into the numbers and then you really understand why you need to be somewhere. And then when people, oh, that's way more expensive than everybody else. Well, okay, here's why. Let's talk about this. Let's actually figure out what value proposition we're putting on the table. And then the question becomes, instead of offering a discount, the question becomes, your reply back is, well, how would you like to change the scope of work to fit your budget?
Exactly.
And that throws them for a loop, because now they're thinking, well, I want everything that we talked about, right? I want the expensive upgrade in the shower, or I want the oil finish instead of the water-based finish and whatever, like with the wax oil or whatever it's going to be, or I want the fancy chevron pattern with the inlays and whatever it is. And they're like, okay, well, I can't do it for any less than what I gave you. So you obviously agree that it's worth that. So let's move forward. When you can start flipping it on them and you have confidence, I don't think enough owners that are outbidding projects have confidence, is what it really comes down to, because they don't know.
That's what I used to say all the time. And sometimes it might become across a little bit arrogant, but it's not about being arrogant. It's having that standard. And it was, I can change the product, or I can put the price. Like, so the client would say, what can you do on the price? Well, I can change the product, or I can put the price up. Which one works best for you? They're like, oh, it's like, so you can't do anything? I said, no, I absolutely pride myself on giving you the best price I can for the work that you require, to the standard of workmanship and quality we're going to provide.
Yes.
Right. So you can't even do £100? No. Right. I've had another couple of prices. Okay. Are they comparative? Oh, I don't know. Okay. Would you like to book the work in or not? Like, it's, and that's where, when there's that level of confidence, again, I don't even think it's arrogance. It's holding yourself to that standard for your family, for your business, for the future. And then people, I think, this guy really wants to do this job and really do it well. You know, and then they'll question someone else saying, oh, yeah, I can do it for £800 less. Well, how are you able to do the same job? We all know the specification might be different. The installation method might be different. But Mrs. Smith down the street does not know the difference. We know, but... So, yeah, I think it's... I think once that clicks, that's the thing. And I think the thing that me and you go through, all these things, these aren't like golden... Like, yes, there might be golden key moments when you implement them, but they're not something like... What's the word? Like rocket scientists. You know, it's not rocket science.
Yeah.
The enable to say no and to sort of hold your price and know your price is correct. A pretty common sense. You know, we all know we should say no at some point, and we know the job should be priced correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably the biggest turning thing for me, is like, you know, I think I always went looking for the golden egg, or the I don't know, the rainbows, and, you know, so there's got to be a golden key to this. And there's not. There's not. It's just hard work and getting your sort of facts in the line.
Yeah.
And then looking after yourself, you know, putting your own oxygen mask on at the same time, you know. So, and that once that formula sort of goes round and round, people get it and people succeed and people just push on. And that's what I think it's... I just think it's bananas that... It's the same problems, and I just hope with us doing these podcasts and the need for learning Or the want, no, not the need, the want for learning in the global flooring industry should make it a really desirable place to work, you know, rather, you know, the electricians and, you know, doctors and maybe things like that, people associate that with a higher level of income. But flooring isn't like tend to be on that chart, but it can be if you want it to be.
I know people that are doing very, very well. I know people that aren't doing so well, and some of them implement things they learn, and others don't. Others have learned their worth, and they value themselves. I did an episode earlier this year called "Why You Need an FU Bank Account." So. That was a big turning point for me. Was, you know, I started charging a little bit more and I built up this savings account. And one day I realized that it had gotten big enough that I could actually afford my own services. So I think first there's a problem that we put on ourselves of, well, I can't afford that much, so I can't charge that much. But then there's the problem of, you know, if you can get past that, then it's having the ability to not need the work. I know a lot of tradespeople, and it doesn't matter what trade they're in, live paycheck to paycheck, and they have to get this project. That's why they're willing to put a discount on it, because they're like, well, I got to get the $500 so I can pay rent at the end of the week. I've got to get this $1,000 so I can pay the electric bill and get food and gas in the truck so I can keep going to work. So if she doesn't want to pay $1,300, I'll do it for the $1,000. Well, you needed that extra $300 because now you can't afford the bill next week without going and barely scraping by. And so, it, you know, I call it why, you know, you need an FU bank account. You need to build up enough retained earnings that you can support the company and yourself for 3 to 6 months. And then when you walk into that project and you bid it, it becomes, I don't need this project. I would enjoy doing this project. And that's a totally different mindset in and of itself, to just want to be somewhere as opposed to I have to be here so that I can feed my family this week. And that gives you a lot of authority and confidence to bid projects differently too.
We do sales training, and I say at the beginning of the sales training, you can use this and it will work. But if you are not in the FU bank account mindset, this sales sort of structure, which it's not like a cheesy sort of shiny shoe type of thing, it's just using integrity and using information that's in front of you. But if you can get into the mindset of, as you said, the FU bank account, you will show up as a different person when you get out of your truck or your van. And that person, even though it'll come across as confident and it'll come across as professional, and people will buy into that this guy has a long-standing, secure business that will look after me if anything goes wrong. If you are in panic mode where you haven't got the facility and you are paying paycheck to paycheck, unless you're a superhuman, you're going to show up differently, no matter how good a salesperson you are. You know, yes, some people get past that with sort of being a chancer and maybe, you know, smoke and mirrors, but the average person will show up differently. And I'm just a huge, huge believer of that. And I think that's, yes, we'd all like a bank account with a chunk of money, and that's all good and it looks great on the bank statement, but actually how it feels to get up like that, that's two different things. And that's, you know, and it's not an overnight thing. That could be 3 months, 6 months, 2 years before some people get to that. And there isn't a quick win. But the quicker you start acting, the quicker you've got a chance to sort of generate that.
Definitely. Yeah, if you can change your attitude, the confidence goes a long way. And I want to say you need to walk in almost arrogant. You don't want to actually be arrogant, but there needs to be an air of arrogance. And you would think it would turn homeowners off, but I don't think it does. I think they like it. Like in my experience, they were almost more intrigued by the fact that I wasn't hungry for the project and that I was like, oh yeah, you know, it'd be fun. Like this, I could see this working out. I'd enjoy working. Like the tone changes and you're like playing them almost to say, you know, you better start working and like showing off for me so that I choose to do your project. You know, I don't have to send you a bid. And it totally flips it around. And I think a lot of people think that you're going to come out, you're going to bid it, you're hungry for it, and you're going to do your best and sharpen that pencil and I stopped playing that game, and I went a different approach of like, oh, you want to work with me? Okay, well, you're going to have to earn it then. Like, I get to choose you. You don't get to, choose me. So, what else do you find? Like, there's, again, I think that it doesn't matter that we're an ocean apart or different country. And although obviously our countries are fairly similar and we have history together and all that fun stuff, right? We got a bunch of stupid Yanks over here that didn't want to be a part of you no more. but we have developed independently for the last few hundred years, and there are differences in culture at this point and how we operate. But again, you look at it, and I think one thing you guys have done better at this point is that there's still training available for, like, you can go get a good, not union background, but there's like trade schools to go to and actually learn trades in. Whereas in the States, the union is not as prevalent as it once was. And the training systems within companies are pretty poor for the most part across the board in the trades. There's some of the larger companies have good training programs, but like your average independent Joe there's no planned training of how to bring up an apprentice and get them educated to be able to go out on their own one day. So what do you think happened? Like, how did that kind of still stay in place when the college agenda really started getting pushed late 70s, early 80s, and they've essentially pulled trades out of every high school in America here. There's very few that have any kind of technical vocational stuff in them still.
I think the from what I've seen from the education, obviously you could do joinery, roofing, plumbing, but definitely not flooring. And that's where I think there's a big gap to sort of bring that into a very recognised trade. I think I think when I was looking at apprenticeship, well, even when we employed apprentices, we would have to put them on a joinery, so they'd have to be able to create a little mini roof or hang doors, which wasn't really relevant to fitting a hardwood floor. And I still think it's a huge, huge gap in the UK. In all capacities, because people seem to fall into the flooring industry. They help their friend on a Saturday that then turns into a job, and then suddenly 5 years later they're a carpet installer, it's like, and they've got their own van. And I think, again, over the last even 4 years, there hasn't been that many places to go and learn the trade as much. Yeah, there's been some that have been there historically, but I think it's only been in the last sort of 3 years, different choices of different skill sets you could go and learn. And then, I mean, I may have missed it or whatever, but certainly, we did all of our upskilling in-house. We couldn't send them anywhere to do anything. I know that was wood, hardwood. Mm-hmm. But the LVT and carpet market was very, very sort of close-knit. But now you can go to different places. So I think it's going to be a very different space in the future. Certainly, I think, manufacturers are now getting onto the bandwagon to offer free training. But yeah, I think if that's a long-winded way of answering this the question, but I think the more personal development has come into it, people are more, able to get on faster, I think, is the... Mm-hmm. But that's only... It feels to me, I may be completely wrong, but it certainly feels like it's only been about 5 years. But again, I don't know if that's because I was such an enclosed environment before. I completely kept myself in my bubble. So I dealt with my team, and I dealt with my customers, and I had a little family group, and that was it.
Yeah.
And like... And that's just one thing I love with what we do, is we get to speak to people like yourself across the pond or across the UK. Before, I was speaking to Mrs. Jones, Mr. Dunn, and that was it. But that's obviously, that is also the message in the schooling. My son is going to go to a different school in September where they take engineering seriously. So it's sponsored by Hitachi Rail and some other engineering companies. But it's going to take people to go into those places to say, look, have you considered the flooring industry? And I'm quite, imagine speaking to 1,000 students, they'll be going, mm-hmm. what?
Yeah.
The what industry? Never heard of it. Oh, we've got fluffy stuff on the stairs. I didn't know that was a career.
Exactly.
You know? So we've got a long way to go. But I do think people are starting to trigger that the more other people do it. So
it's definitely growing. You know, I look at it as, I think as young boys always want to play with their big Tonka trucks, right? They can go get the dump truck and the cement truck, and like Tonka makes all these big toys that you can play with in your sandbox, and they're cool. But that's because you can see them. Right, you can drive around. Mom, dad drive you around in the car. What do you? Well, these days they have screens. They're probably not even looking out the windows anymore. But you and I grew up. We didn't have anything to look at but out the window, and you can see road workers out there doing stuff, operating big machinery. You can see buildings going up, and that you can, you know, do framing or do roofing. Like, other trades get a lot more exposure to the world. That it's kids don't even think about it, and they know that that's an option. But you're right. I don't think most people know that flooring, tile setting, hardwood, carpet, like none of this stuff is an option, because maybe if you're lucky, your parents afforded a remodel at some point. But more than likely, you were at school while it happened, out of sight, out of mind. And so you don't even consider it when it comes time for something. And then you, on top of that, you have everybody saying, well, you got to go to school. You got to go get a college degree. It's the only way you can be successful these days. Bullshit. With the lack of tradespeople is going to make, if you're not finding that this trade is lucrative now, give it a decade and it's going to be way more lucrative. And so we have to go find people now. Let's train them up. Let's get them educated. And I think you're exactly right that there's probably stuff in place that we didn't know about beforehand. Like, I know here in the States, we have certified flooring installers, and it's been around since late 90s, early 2000s. I want to say late 90s. But it was like grassroots. It was a couple of people driving city to city, flying to city at first, you know, certifying people in proper carpet installation. And it's grown from there. And I've seen them do more trainings in the past year than I've seen them do in years. We've got the Floor Covering Education Foundation that's trying to get like a 10-week program to get people at least introduced to the tools and what the different types of flooring are and the basics behind them into vocational colleges across the country. And they're slowly gaining steam. And so I think there's stuff in place, but what does it look like when we as business owners get out there and we take a day and volunteer once a month at the local high school, or we go and do meet the parent day at school, or, you know, like you got to go in and talk about in front of your kid's kindergarten or first grade class about your career, you know, and do career day or something like that. Like, what exposure can we get? Can you work with the math teacher? Can you find a way to work with your kid's math teacher every year? And maybe you volunteer to go in and teach them how to read a tape measure instead of the teacher having to do it. And then you can give a little talk about, hey, this skill is useful. Like, you actually have to have it in the world. 'Cause I know as a kid, it was always, when am I going to use this in the real world? Go show them, right? Oh, I'm never going to use the Pythagorean theorem. Really? I work in construction. I need a 3-4-5 or a 6-8-10 triangle all the time. Here's why. This is what it does for me in my career and how it helps me solve problems and make things pretty. Go give them the real world scenario and get some exposure. It's a day. It's a couple hours. But it's, if we don't go be an advocate for ourselves and our future, who else is going to do it?
And I think even taking the younger generation out of this, from one thing we see over here, which I'm sure it must be the same over there, is even the most qualified, exceptional flooring contractor doesn't take the space to work on the business, not own the business. So yeah, they're getting 100 square meters down here, 70 meters down here. And then suddenly they've lost 5 months. And like there was tasks to do 5 months ago. Mm-hmm. But some of the guys that are operating at a high level that we work with do the same as what we do is and take space. They go, you know, maybe they'll go for 4 weeks, 5 weeks at full sort of pace and then take one day off just to work on the business. Some do that weekly, some do that monthly. But again, certainly what I used to do, and that's what one of the things I made sure we don't do across our businesses is just take that space. And people think, well, I can't afford to take a full day off work. Well, you're not taking it off work. You are going to work, but you're going to do the shit that you needed to do before. And yes, that's just exact. And again, people think that just sounds nuts. Well, why would I take off a day a month? You know, it's 12 days a year. But all the guys that are doing that are moving forward faster. It's like, well, that makes sense. They're doing less work. They're not doing less work. They're doing more work. I mean, have you found that with some of your clients that just not taking the space and doing the do rather than?
I think that's one of the biggest issues as business. Like, again, it's not a trades problem. It's a business owner problem. It has nothing to do with being a flooring installer. It has to do with most small business owners don't understand business and they don't get educated on it. But yeah, I think that's huge. All right. I talk about, can you find 15 minutes a day to step back, get a 30,000 view on your company, 15 minutes and start working on a employee handbook or on your numbers? It doesn't take a lot. If you can find a day, like I would schedule down days, but I would put deliveries on them, right? I knew that, I got a Monday through Thursday project, but the next 3 weeks after that, it's 3 5-day projects in a row. When am I going to have time to deliver the materials? Well, I got that Friday. I'm going to schedule all 3 deliveries that Friday. I'm going to go bang them out and get it done. And then if I can get home in time, I'm going to sit down and I can deal with some paperwork. Or I knew that, I haven't gotten paperwork to my bookkeeper in a minute. So I'm going to go home. I'm going to spend the 10 minutes, scan everything and email it off to her. I'm going to sit down and, you know, one of the best things I did was I never had to label receipts and invoices because the minute it was handed to me, I put the notes on it. So I wasn't thinking a month down the road when I was looking at all of my paperwork and having to send it off to my bookkeeper of, oh man, what receipt did this project go to? And was it materials or was this supplies on my end? Like, what was it? The minute the receipt spit out of the machine, I was putting the note on it. It took an extra 15, 30 seconds, but everything was always in place, well organized and done. And so if you take the time to nurture the business, it becomes easier. And you said like, okay, take a day a month. One of the beauties of the spreadsheet that I built to go back to that aspect of it is it asks you how many days a year you want to work. So if you know that you're going to spend 12 days not working and you're going to be in the office, so you don't, like as an owner operator, those are days you don't generate revenue. You can build that into the spreadsheet and it's just going to tell you that your revenue per day on the days you don't work needs to be higher. So you can accommodate that one day a month into your rate so that you still make the same amount as if you were in the field. And if you're looking at, you know, if you work 20 days a month, you're amateurizing one day over 19 other working days. 119, you think 1/19th is going to affect your bid? Come on, get out of town. Like that's nothing for you to ask for. At $1,000, if it was $1,000 a day, a 20th is $50. So 1/19th is probably like 53, something like that. You think $53 is going to affect your total? Come on, get out of here.
The thing that blows people's minds again is the 10 days spent in Mexico with your family. Oh, well, who's going to pay for that? Well, where do you think the money's going to come from? It's not going to come from the government. It's not going to come from someone else. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, right, let's not go mad and like have 6 holidays. Let's just go, okay, we go on one holiday to Mexico and maybe one locally in the same country. Right. How much is that going to cost? I don't know, 7,000. Right. Yeah. You build that in to the 12 months worth of trading because he's not coming from anywhere else. Yes, you can say, oh, well, I'll do some Saturdays, I'll do this. Well, what about not doing the Saturdays and building it into the Monday's price? And it's like, and then the light bulb comes on. It's like, wow. So I can work Monday to Friday, maybe 8 till 5, and take my family on holiday and still have a fuck you bank account. That's correct. And it's like,
yeah.
Yeah. And this, yeah. And that's really where it's super cool, you know, and that just feels different.
Yeah, when you're able to start putting all of that together, that's when it gets great. I mean, my joke is, look, you want to go install and bang out flooring for 40 years, you're probably going to end up needing a knee, a shoulder, something, right? So all of you that are offering discounts and not getting what you need, what are you going to do? Are you going to keep that list of all your clients? And when you need surgery, you're going to go knock on the door and start asking? Hey, I have a $50,000 surgery coming up, and you were one of 5,000 clients, so I need an extra $10. And you better go get $10 from all 5,000 clients so you can afford your $50,000 surgery. Good luck. You might as well just charge the extra, you know, $100, $200, $300 now so that you have it in 40 years when you need to have the surgery. You can't get it later.
No, that's it. I'm figuring out why you're doing it. We're not going to be mind readers and figure out exactly where we're going, but at least if you've got a sort of a basic idea of where you'd like to be in 3, 5, 10 years' time, and then what does that look like? Like, how much do you need in 5 years' time to either change your career or to take extra guys on or to just work 3 days a week? Oh, I won't worry about that now. But then the time creeps on. It's gone. You know, I just can't believe that. I mean, I turned 40 last year. I've got a 13-year-old, a 7-year-old. I'm like, where are these years gone? I think it's as important when you're working out that bid or quotation. That's why it's important now, not important next week. And that's what we find, you know, and just keep that level of confidence. But I'm trying to think what else we...
I got one. You brought it up, right? It's... son of a bitch. Blank. You go ahead. You had something. It'll come back to me.
I'll go with mine. So if in the US you are an installer of carpet or LVT, and you supply the product and you supply the labor, what would you say the best, apart from recommendation, how else are the guys getting the phone to ring? What's the number one way, apart from recommendation? Because I think the number one way would be getting previous clients. Mm-hmm. But if you have to pay for marketing, what have you found that works in the US?
I think Google's going to be right up there. If you know how to actually hire a company and hold them accountable to get you results with like paid per click advertising on Google and work that SEO, I think you're going to do very, very well. I personally used Facebook community groups and I didn't pay for advertising. I just told great stories on my Facebook page and then shared that to the community groups on the days that you were allowed to promote your business. And now, granted, I live in a city of 4.5 million people, so there's a lot of opportunity. Somebody put up a formula the other day in one of the groups, David Requa, and he was talking about how to kind of calculate out like what your market share percentage was. And I had just under 0.5% of all market share in Phoenix, according to his formula, with how many projects I did a year. Like, I was not scraping the surface of potential here, right? Like, there's so much opportunity. It's hard to fail, in my opinion. Like, you've got to be really, really bad at business to fail here, in my opinion. And yet it still happens. But it took my time, because I had to spend like an hour on Saturday morning posting all of that up. That was my investment, but that's what worked really well for me, I think. But I see paid advertising on social media do well for companies. But I think, again, you've got to find a company that you can trust to get your promotion in front of the right buyers communicating the right message. I have a talk on, like, a lot of the ads I see are, you know, 40% off. I install flooring next day. I don't care. Like, that's not the problem I have. Like, what problem are you solving for me, right? And my pitch was always, like, I would find out why I was in the home. What problem was I solving for them? And then I would tell the story and have before and afters of the project. Here's what happened that was so devastating. Here's the solution that was provided. Here's how the project went. Here's how it looked throughout. And other women would connect by reading that story and say, that's me. This guy, he solves the problem I offer.
Yeah.
That's all actual sales is asking the right questions and solving the problem that is there in front of you. We had a question last night on one of our masterminds of, I've got all these new samples. Which one should I take in first? My answer, none of them. You haven't asked enough questions. Why are you getting them out the van? Why are they coming out the van?
Mm-hmm.
Ask some questions first. Like, you know, what problem are we solving here? Are we herringbone? Are we plank? Are we brown? Are we yellow? Are we what colour? You know, then go out to the van and solve the solution with the information the client has given you.
Yes.
And that's all it is. And people think, oh no, I'm going to do sales training. I'm a carpet installer. I don't need to be a salesman. Well, we don't need to be a salesman. We just need to ask us good questions. That's it. Yep. And we all want to know those answers anyway, because it makes our life easier. You know, it's when's the kitchen getting installed? What colours are your walls going? Just basic, you know, when is the decoration getting done? Because the professional questions. I'm glad you said that, because I'm a big word of mouth, number one.
Yep.
In the UK, Facebook groups definitely work to get that local work. Paid advertising on Facebook seems to attract the cheaper end of the market, I found. So again, having a company that can run Google Ads would be sort of maybe number three on the list. So, you know, it would be the word of mouth, having a website, local SEO.
Yeah.
And then number three would be the Google Ads. And that's why I think we run around 170 Google Ads accounts.
Wow.
And we tell people the truth. We are coming from a flooring installer's sort of mindset. And I mean, even, and again, another client said last night, oh, I want to run Google Ads, but I'm booked like, I think 10 weeks in advance. I'm like, why? Oh, well, you know, lots of other people are doing it. I said, but why? Like, what, do you need more work? Not really. No, I'm up to my neck in it. Right. Well, you don't want to run Google Ads then.
Yeah, unless you want to hire more people and get that down to 5 weeks, what do you need more leads for? You're killing it right now. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was like, well, it's just, I thought I might need to be doing more, but can you do more? No. Are you going to take more people on? No. Do you want to take more people on? No. Why are we having this conversation?
It's too funny. Yeah. Well, everyone else is doing it. It seems like that's what the successful companies do. I got to do it too. No, you don't. You got to look at your business as your business. It is an individual living, breathing entity. Like, assess it on its own merits. I thought of my question, and we're going to have to make this the last one. So you had mentioned that people are, you know, they get too busy. They don't work on their business. How many people love the idea of the groups that you offer and the mentoring that you offer, and then their excuse is, well, I'm too busy right now. And then you're like, yeah, that's the point. If you don't do it now, you're not, like, if you don't learn this skill set, you're not going to free up the time so that you have more time. I'm like, it's never going to get easier.
And I think of a percent, I'm thinking of a percentage. I've got to say, which sounds awful, but it's going to be about true, 50% of people that come and do the training, 100% love it, which I'm very privileged to say, but 50% take the time to do anything about it, and make time is the word I'm looking for. Make time. And one thing that's frustrated me, and I'm getting over it, is you can't force anyone to do anything. So, you know, you can be the best sales guy, you can be the best, have the best lead magnets and things like that. If someone's not ready to commit and there's not enough leverage, there is no point taking their money. Absolutely zero point. The leverage has got to be more and be ready to do the work. And that you can see it night and day. The guys that are ready to do the work, the business just takes off and stably takes off. And then you see the other guys that talk a great game and then just doing the same shit they were doing last year. And but they've just got to be ready. And no matter how much we chat to them and talk to them or mentor them, they've just got to kind of go, I'm ready, which again sounds a bit fluffy. But that's just one hard realization I've found with like mentoring and masterminds. You can just see it. You can just see the hunger of, I want to change. And when you see that, that's when we're like, this is amazing. But it's then you see the opposite end where they've got these great ideas and they don't take the action. You just let them go. Let them go, I think, is the thing. But the thing I love doing is seeing the ones that don't do anything, and then they come back and go, actually, yeah, I should have picked up the pace. But I would say it's 50-50 people are ready to take action. And I don't know about you, is that similar? You know,
I get a lot of people that are interested, and then they hear what the time commitment's going to be, and they're just like, yeah, no, that's not going to work for me right now. I'm just too busy. And it, you know, again, it doesn't make sense to me. Like, if you're too busy now, you're not going to be not busy later. You've got to make some sacrifices to free up the time to get it to work. I also think that I look at it like dealing with people that have addictions now. And essentially, like you said, right, if they're not ready to commit, they're not ready to commit. An addict isn't willing to give up their drug of choice until they actually decide. It doesn't matter what we tell them or how we try and help them. Until they're ready to actually make the change, nothing happens. And I think it's the exact same process. Until you decide that you want to run a business better and you want to go seek out the resources and opportunities available, it doesn't matter what anybody presents to you. Like, you have to want to make the change. You have to want to get uncomfortable. And I've learned that that's a much smaller pool than I thought it would be. And I'm getting over it, but I'm learning that that's okay. That I can't save the world, but I can make a difference one business at a time.
That's what makes no sense to me when our low point of entry groups, low cost effective, and someone says, I don't have time to commit to the group. And I'm like, but you've just told me you're making no money. You've told me that you would like to do this or like to do that, but you can't create the time. You just want to work till 7 o'clock every night. You want to work every Saturday and not see your family, but you can't create some time to, you know, to come on, you know, once every 3 months or once every month for this, or you're not prepared to travel from A to B, which could change everything. You know, but we would know we can change that, but you've got to stick in. And again, you've just got to, I think it was one of my coaches that even said to, you've just got to let them go and decide. Well, and then when they're ready, you get twice as better results. Because there is no point, someone that on the fence, yes, come and do the work. Someone's on the fence the other way, not going to do the work. You are wasting your time not showing up. But it's probably the biggest excuse. I don't have time. I can't afford it. I don't have time. It's probably and I think if you can't make five times that amount back, you shouldn't be in the group type of thing. Not in a nasty way, but it's because others are making 5, 10, 20 times more back their investment by spending the time in that environment with other installers, with other trainers, and just embracing it. That's a fair point. I don't think there's anyone that doesn't embrace the learning that isn't actually getting anything from it. I know that's an obvious, but, you know, someone that puts in 100%, there's not anyone that puts 100% and doesn't get anything back out. They all get
Yeah.
200 back out.
But they have to want it. Yeah. it blows my mind. Like, and that's why I say, like, when I'm talking about, and I'm advertising my groups, I'm like, these are vetted people. Like, these are the people you are looking to be around because they've chosen to be there. It's no joke. You're going to get something out of them. The groups, at least the way I do it, is we meet every other week. There's five people. The meetings go 2.5-3 hours. It's long. It's a big time commitment. I get that. I'm asking a lot of people. But if you're willing to sit down every other week and spend 2.5-3 hours with other business owners, sit down, talk through your problems in your business, talk through their problems in their business, come up with solutions, ideas, exchange info back and forth, mentor each other, and then you go do the work the other 13 days before you meet again, the results have been absolutely killer for them. There's nobody. Like, I am underpriced for what is being provided, to be honest, and I'm okay with that because that, like, I don't want price to be a barrier to entry on it. Like, I'm trying to make it reasonable so that people that are struggling to come along can still have access to it, to be honest. Like, I want to be able to help more people, but as it grows and becomes more successful, I can tell you that price is going to only keep going up, and it's going to continue to get out of reach for more people, or I'm going to have to develop other platforms and systems to have tiered offerings of how much help you get at what price. And it's not to say that I think people get mad that, like, you're charging for info, and it's not that I'm charging for info. It's that you have to have some skin in the game, because I've got people that reach out and they want advice, and, like, I'll have a conversation. Reach out on Facebook, like, send me a message on Messenger, and I'll happily talk with you, and we can talk about your business. I'll give you 30 minutes, an hour. But the next time you reach out, I'm going to find out if you did what we talked about. And if you didn't, we're probably going to have a very short conversation. Because if you don't respect my time and what I'm bringing to the table, I'm not going to keep pouring into you, because there's no return. And it doesn't make sense to continue to spend time on a bad investment. And look, you don't keep friends around very long if there's not some kind of reward in it. That's just human nature. Like, and I'm not saying it has to be a monetary reward.
No.
But I'm not going to keep someone in my life that isn't providing fruit. What can they bring me? Happiness? Can they bring me joy? Do they make me laugh? Like, what is it? Like, why do I enjoy spending time with this person? And so if you're constantly coming and asking for advice, but then you're not doing anything with it, how long do you think I'm truly going to continue to provide you with advice?
Exactly. But on the vice versa, the ones that embrace it, get involved, mm-hmm. do what they say they're going to do, it breeds, like, you know, suddenly, like, the accountability is there. The accountability of, like, I want to do good for this group. I want to do well for myself, and yeah. that's where the leverage is. And I think that's I think we've discussed again before about, as being part of a leader of the group, that also brings us as mentors, or whatever you want to class as consultants or whatever, we've got to bring ourselves to a certain standard as well, which helps our own personal development, because we'd be hypocritical if we weren't constantly upskilling ourselves, no matter if it's mm-hmm. in, again, it, I suppose it doesn't matter if it's roofing, flooring, or anything, but we're empowering people to upskill all the time. So we're putting in our schedule, well, we need to upskill on this, we need to upskill on this, we need to upskill on this. And it's just a constant, it's just never going to, it's just a train of knowledge. And then, and that's one of the powerful things I found with the sort of mastermind groups is, you know, me and Sarah definitely don't know it all, but then there'll be someone in the room that'll have had experience in that, and then they'll put their opinion in, and someone else said, well, actually, I've had this. Mm-hmm. Suddenly you've got four or five people where it's like, wow, we've come up with a solution without even needing intervention. And that, I think that's where the power is. And it just, people don't really get it until they get involved and get amongst it, really. And I think that's what I did when everything went. I just threw myself into every sort of group, and as I said, it wasn't counselling, but you know, it was, mm-hmm. well, I've done it this way, and that way it didn't work. and now I'm going to do it this way and learn from other people even faster and ticker, you know, 15 years of experience and embrace it. So it's, yeah, I think it's, so I think the message is get involved, do the work, and stop making excuses.
That's it. At its core is you got to go get uncomfortable. You got to be willing to do the work. You got to stop making excuses and get out there. And we're not so different after all, apparently, right? No. It's the same thing across the pond as it is here in America, as it is in anywhere else. I see the same questions in every group, no matter what country it's from. If I spoke a different language, I could probably find a flooring group in Germany and in Brazil and in Russia. They probably exist. There are probably a bunch of guys and gals in there asking right now, how much should I charge for this? It's the same, it's the same problem everywhere. It doesn't matter. And so how are we going to step up, change, and go promote something in a positive light and make it better? And I think getting involved and being willing to get uncomfortable and make some decisions to better yourself so that you can better others is the way to do it.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Absolutely. Tom, anything that you would like to add at the end here?
No, I think we've covered it. I think it's awesome that we're doing the same thing, solving the same problems. We've now got a relationship. I'm sure we can grow as people together. Probably won't be the last podcast we do. Well, not probably. It won't be the last podcast that we do. And just thank you so much for having me on your show.
You're welcome. Where can people find you? If they don't want to do Floor Academy and they want to do Cockerill and Company and have to battle weird hours for, you know, doing stuff in the UK, where can they find you?
So podcast, the UK Flooring Podcast, on all major channels. A really good place to find us is on Instagram, which is the UK Flooring Podcast, or at Cockerill & Co. We do have a website, cockerillandco.co.uk, if you wanted to suss us out. But we'd love people to see, give us feedback on our show. And yeah, and if we can help anyone in any way, but that's the number one place is Instagram and on the podcast.
Love it. Go check them out, folks. They got good stuff going on over there. Everywhere, the more you hear, the better off you're going to be. Go get opinions from 5, 6, 7 different people. You know, those with many advisors can make better decisions. And that's what you're looking for, is how do you find the people you trust that are doing it and making it work? Because if you keep hanging around with the same old Joes that you're getting advice from and nothing's changing, it's probably time to start looking elsewhere to get advice so that you can actually make some changes, because what you're getting isn't cutting the mustard. So thank you for joining us. I very much appreciate it. Make sure, again, go to FloorAcademyPod.com, check out the store. And, you know, you can pick up some swag over there. You can help support the show at patreon.com/Floor Academy. Again, $5 a month goes a long way to help me continue making the content, provide all this stuff for you all so that I can keep doing it. We got a word from International Surfaces event, which is where I was able to run into Tom and Sarah and meet them finally and make this all happen. So stay connected, continue discovering, learn more, and network. That's what I was doing. Now available, you will want to access the International Surfaces Events new resource library. Flip through the digital pages of the TICE resource books to source products, take tailored journeys through the TICE event offerings, or watch, rewind, and share TICE recorded content from the event. Available now at intlsurfaceevent.com or click on the link in the show notes. You'll even see this podcast featured inside the TICE 2024 textbook, offering select recordings from this year's amazing events in Las Vegas. It's happening next year, same time it always does, end of January. Get it on your calendar. If you don't book it out now, I bet you Tom will agree with this. If your clients don't put something on the calendar and book it out, they go and book work over it, don't they?
Exactly. Book it now.
Book it now. Put it on the calendar. Make the commitment. You'll be mentally prepared and then you won't go looking for work to put over it. You'll tell clients. Here's the thing. They're not going to care that you have that date unavailable. They may want it done then, but if they truly want you, they'll wait, and you'll figure it out. It's not that hard to move them a week. Just do it, and then go and enjoy, and you can build the cost of the conference into what you charge, and you're not losing any money. And then you should be able to come back and add 10x the cost of the conference into your revenue over the next 12 months. And then it'll be there permanently. So it pays for itself over and over and over again. So that's my spiel. Make sure you check out Tice. We love them. We love being able to go. We love networking, meeting everybody. You never know who you're going to run into or what relationship you're going to make that will add fruit to your life. Thank you for listening. I very much enjoy it. And we will catch you all next week.